hour number two on this Thursday edition of the Hagman Report. Author John Finch is our guest. He's the author of a book called The Father Effect. And as he was telling us just during the break, don't let the name fool you. This book is for women also, and they could get a lot out of reading this book. It's not just about or for fathers. It's for everybody involved in the whole family.
And as a gift from the women to the men, too. It's not a subtle hint, but certainly a helpful instructional product. You know, in a way, when I read this book, I kind of, in the back of my mind, I was wishing I had it like 20 years ago. Seriously. It had that. I can't really describe it, but it helped me. It informed me. And I felt that it would probably make me a better father, but more in tune with things. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's just my yeah. viewpoint.
John, let's get into this a little bit. Isolation. You talk about isolation. Why is it that you feel men isolate?
You know, so many of us, and I've struggled with this myself, becomes kind of a pride issue, if you will. You know, there's this mentality that as men, that we have to have all the answers, that we need to kind of be able to figure everything out on our own. You know, we teach kids, especially young boys at a very young age, that they got to suck it up. They can't cry. They got to man up, be a big boy, if you will. And so we're teaching these young boys not to be real, not to show real emotion. And so then we turn around and wonder why we have all these men that don't know how to communicate with their wives, and we have the divorce rates that we do, and all of the struggles and issues that we do. So we've got to change that, and we got to help fathers understand that it's okay to be real. And when we're not real, when we make mistakes, when we have struggles and issues, which is things that as men we really have a problem sharing with others, because of shame and guilt and unworthiness, we tend to isolate. We tend to go into our man cave or into our office, and we just struggle with that issue of not being able to be real and authentic. And we've got to change that. We've got to get a group of people around us, a group of men around us that we trust, that we can tell our deepest, darkest secrets to, and that we're not ashamed to share the struggles and issues that we're having. And I'll tell you what, When I talk to men's groups and men, you know, it's amazing. I start sharing my story about alcoholism and all the things that I've struggled with. And, you know, it's like they go, wow, you know what? I struggle with that too. And so to be in a group of men that you can be real with, you can get advice and counsel from, you know, especially the older men that have been there, done that, it's a big step in us changing, you know, the family dynamic, the church dynamic, everything that we're doing. If we can just help men do that, it'll be such a huge step forward. So isolation does nothing but lead us into depression and tempt us to do pornography and all of these other things that come from it. And so that's really man's worst enemy is isolation.
Right. Now, just to be clear, when you were talking about, you know, telling our children it's okay to have feelings, I'm paraphrasing, of course, you're not, and folks having read the book and being familiar, you're not teaching your son to be girlish, or boy, I'm gonna get emails for saying that. You know what I'm saying? You're not teaching your sons to be effeminate, I suppose, or snowflakes. It's being a real man, help me out here. I'm sinking. Help. Throw me a lifeline.
Sure. No, absolutely. Absolutely not. We're not saying to be weak or to any of those things. What we're saying is it's okay for young boys to show real emotion, to be upset, to cry. It's okay for men to cry. You know, we've got this idea and this myth and this lie that even as men, we can't cry. We can't show emotion and be real. No, I've cried in front of my kid, and I've got no problem with that. There's no shame in that. They see that I'm struggling, and they know that it's okay for them to struggle. So there's affirmation even in that. But what I've learned mostly is to just be real with my kids. I've told them stories about my, you know, growing up and the things that I struggled with and all of that. And so there's a way to walk young men through life and help them be men, be real, bold, courageous, men, but yet also allow them to know that they can be real and honest and open with you as a father.
Very good advice. If we can, I want to get into depression, because I've talked to, I've gone through, you know, periods of depression. I've seen people go through depression, and it is, seems to be a major issue in our society today. How did depression affect your struggle with depression affect your ability to be a father?
You know, depression is such a deep abyss, if you will. It is, you know, I struggle with these, I used to call them ruts. And there were these, every once in a while as I was younger, there would be maybe once every few months. They would last, you know, a few hours. And as I've gotten older, they've gotten to where they lasted a lot longer and become a lot more deeper, if you will. And so I came to understand and accept that, you know, probably I got it from my father from a biological standpoint. And so how it impacted me, we talked about isolation. As a man who suffered from depression, I would isolate a lot, all the time, because of just this deep, dark cloud that was surrounding me. You know, the only thing that really kept me going in many instances was just my family, just my kids. And my wife, you know, I didn't care about anything else or anyone else. And so it really impacted my ability to be the kind of father and man and husband God called me to be. And I still struggle with that today at times. You know, I've found some medication that works really well for me. And that, you know, I've been through a few different ones and finally found the right one. And now that I have the right medication, I'll tell you what, it is a game changer. It has really changed my life and the relationship I have with my family.
But getting to the root cause of the depression, though, and the way I read this, now again, feel free to correct me if I'm incorrect. The things like depression and things like the isolation are symptoms of the larger problem that you experienced from the father effect, I suppose. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. Okay. Now, in the depression itself, I think is also a biological thing.
Okay.
So I think, you know, some that may have a great father, but suffer from some type of depression could still struggle with some of those things as far as the isolation is concerned. But just isolation is just an issue that we all struggle with as men, because I think, again, it's a pride thing. It's when we don't live up to the expectations of our wives or our kids or what we believe we're supposed to be as men, we have that tendency to isolate. And that's something that really is just a residual effect of not only the father wound, but I think just the men in general struggle with it.
Okay. And that does make sense. But you know, the biological or the, that aside, the father wound would exacerbate whatever pre-existing underlying condition might exist. And I understand that. And I understand that the, you know, the effect on the family that would have as well as the, you know, yourself. Our guest is John Finch, the author of The Father Effect, and of course a DVD above the same name.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I haven't been able to watch the DVD, which the book gets much deeper in detail, but the DVD is...
Yeah. And in the DVD, just to show you what's different from the book, they interview a number of people, former exotic dancers, former NFL quarterbacks, former drug addicts, pastors, and talk about the far-reaching impact of growing up without a dad and the influential insights as to how to make these life changes through forgiveness and other ways to make a better life for yourself and be a better person. I want to ask you this, John. This was one of the things we talk about on the show occasionally. The generational curses. You mentioned generational curses. What do you see these as, and how have they affected you?
You know, the generational curse of understanding that my dad didn't have a father, and most likely his dad didn't have a father to model what it looked like to be a dad. It's very interesting when I talk with individuals, you know, maybe a young man who's struggling with alcoholism. And it's when I ask the question, hey, what's your dad like? You know, does he struggle? Oh, yeah, he struggles with it too. Oh, you know what? And my grandfather was an alcoholic. So, you know, a lot of people they're not even aware of this generational curse. So then they don't know how to go change it or heal the issue. And so, as you know, for me, it was really God connecting the dots and giving me compassion for my father and seeing this incredibly rough life that he grew up with. And really, ultimately, he couldn't give what he didn't have. And that's what we have to understand and know. You know, so many of our fathers and even grandfathers, these things were being passed down from generation to generation, whether it's addiction, whether it's, you know, fear, whether it's anger. You know, all of these different things can be passed down. And every day as fathers, we're setting that. We're setting the mood for that normal. You know, one of the people we interviewed was Tom Lane. He's a pastor at one of the large churches here. And he talked about interviewing or counseling couples and how he would begin to counsel couples and he would ask a young man, okay, tell me about your life. And the young man would say, well, you know, I had a pretty normal life. Mom and dad got divorced. Dad moved down the street, and I never much saw him anymore. And he has to go, whoa, hold on a second. That's not normal. But yet, so many of us grow up in these homes that, you know, there is abuse going on. There's all these other things going on, and we just begin to accept that as normal. And so the generational curse is something that's alive and well, and most people are not consciously aware of it.
Yeah, and we, you know, this is a Christian show, and one of the things it talks about in the Bible are generational curses. And this comes up when we talk about a number of different issues, and I found it interesting to find that here in the list that you talk about it.
I think, though, in the context of when you say generational curse, it's almost like a multi-generational model mm-hmm. that is being followed, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we can, on another time, we can get into this more deeply because there's a lot there that people need to consider with the generational curses. But for the sake of time, we'll move on. John, I want to ask you this. What was it that turned your life around that led you down the path that you're on today? Was it forgiveness, or what was the one thing that got you on the right track?
It was forgiveness. It was when God showed me forgiveness for my father. That's the moment that my life radically changed. It's as if, you know, I had these old, cracked, dirty pair of glasses, and God said, okay, I'm going to give you a new set of glasses. You know, everything that I did, the way I looked at life, the way I looked at my family, all of those things just changed because I was no longer carrying this incredible burden of anger. And it was really a result of that. That was the catalyst for the radical life change for me was forgiving my father. And I'll tell you, people that we talk to in the book and in the film, there are similar stories there. And it's so fun to see and hear those stories of how forgiveness plays such a key role in helping them ultimately become the person that God created them to be.
Okay. And how was it that you found the forgiveness for yourself and for your father? You said that God showed you. How did what happened? How'd that come about?
I was literally in the midst of a counseling session. Now, this is something, you know, most men will say, whoa, hold on a second. Counseling? again, that pride issue. We don't want to admit that we need help or that we struggle or have issues, right? And I remember at the time going to the counselor and telling my wife, hey, don't tell anybody I'm going to the counselor. Because it was that, again, the pride thing. So it was in the midst of one of these counseling sessions that the question was presented to me, you know, how can you be so angry, bitter, and resentful towards a man who didn't know how to be a father? And that was it for me. You know, it was in that question that I gave my father and myself forgiveness for all the anger and bitterness that I'd carried towards my dad for so many years. I mean, I referred to him as a coward because of what he did. And I couldn't even say the word dad for the first several sessions of my counseling because of just the anger and the emotional connection there. And so that was ultimately what was it for me. And every man's journey is different. Every woman's journey is different. But for me, that's how it played out.
Okay.
Wow. Interesting. I want to hit this before we do run out of time. You have something called, well, you're the founder of something called the Perfect Father Ministries. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, I believe, right? Tell us about that and what you do, what that ministry does. I think it's kind of, to me, that's important, and I think people are going to be interested to hear what you actually do.
Sure. So the Perfect Father Ministries is actually a 501c3, and it's kind of the big umbrella that the Father Effect falls under. We also have another project called Encouraging Dads, where it's just little stories where we're just trying to love and support and encourage fathers, because there's enough stuff out there that are beating dads up, right? So the Father Effect and the Encouraging Dads project are really outreaches of the Perfect Father Ministries. And we've made the film and the book. We're coming up with additional resources. We're also doing what we can to get the book and film in prisons, in pregnancy care centers. We've got a lot of various organizations that are using our short film that's available online for free, that are using it in ways to help dads understand the impact that they have. They're using it at a pregnancy care center in Kentucky that are really helping young fathers understand the responsibility and the impact that they have on their kids. They're using it in men's groups for fathers that have been separated because of maybe a court order from their kids and from their wives. So there's a lot of things that we're trying to do. Essentially, it's about educating, encouraging, and equipping men to become the father they created to be.
Okay. John, I want to ask you this. We got about 7 minutes left in the interview. A few things. One, advice for men and women who are struggling with a father wound.
First step is they've got to admit they're wounded. You know, the people I run into, they don't want to admit that they have an issue. They live in denial. And once I start to talk with them and we really start to get into the beef of what it is they're dealing with, whether it's addiction or whatever it might be, you know, you start to peel back the layers, and so many times it comes back and it's rooted in a father wound. So you have to be willing to admit that you're wounded, that you need healing, you need forgiveness. And then I am a huge advocate of counseling. I think, you know, my counselor was a guy who loved on me and encouraged me, but he called me out in my BS, you know, when I was bluffing him or saying, you know, whatever it is I was saying. And so we need a guide. We need somebody there, I believe, a professional, if you will. And, you know, I call my guy, my doctor, my counselor, my Aaron to Moses. He was the one that really helped me get through the journey. And then if you can surround yourself with a group of people that, again, you can be real and honest with and have these great conversations and get guidance and wisdom from, and ultimately, you know, ask God. He'll show you the way, man. He's there to help, and he longs to help you be the person that he created you to be.
Okay.
You know, wherever you're at, if you're watching this program, listening to it on Global Star BTR, whatever, and you are a father, you're a mother, you're a son, you're a daughter, whatever, there's something in this book for you. And trust me when I tell you that. It's that kind of a book, and the reviews, I'm not even going to start there. You can look at the reviews. Give us your website, or the website again, for the book and DVD.
TheFatherEffect.com. So it's TheFatherEffect.com.
Right. Thank you. Okay. And, yeah, you can, see the glowing reviews.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
I gotta ask you this though, because when I read this book, this is kind of a weird question. What's your favorite chapter of this book?
I would probably have to say the one that my wife wrote.
Okay.
You know, it's so interesting, the number of women that have reached out and actually said that was their favorite too, because my wife shares very openly and honestly about what she's been able to learn and do and be supportive of, knowing that I've been through what I've been through and that I've struggled with a follower wound and all these other things. So she writes very transparently and authentically about what that looks like to be a wife of someone who's been wounded and has struggled with what I've struggled with. And also my kids were able to write a little bitty piece and paragraph, in that chapter. So that was fun. They really got a kick out of that.
I kind of suspected that was going to be the case. But I didn't want to speak for you. And folks, this is a great book, the DVD as well, although I have to admit I did not watch the DVD, but the book is fantastic. And it's, first of all, you know, there's a diagnosis here. Then there's a treatment protocol. And I think that this speaks this speaks to the majority of the population. And it's informational, it's inspirational, and it takes us out of that valley.
And it deals with a subject that is not normally talked about, and a really important part of life is the husband and the father role in the household. And as you said, Dad, at the very beginning of this interview, how the nuclear family is just being demolished in the public, in the mainstream, and demonized. And this book shows you the effects of doing that in a society. And one last question, John. What advice would you give to men to become better dads and better husbands?
You know, just do the best you can with what you have. When you get knocked down, when you have, you know, those days, just keep getting back up. Keep being engaged and involved as best you can on a daily basis. You know, one of the things I've learned, probably the best piece of advice was, when I mess up, you know, when I lose my temper or do something I shouldn't do with my kids, I go and have honest conversations with them and ask them for forgiveness. And I share, you know, I'm sorry, I blew it, I messed up, will you forgive me? Because what that does is that shows them a couple of different things. It shows them that Dad's human. He's not perfect, but he's doing the very best he can. And it also shows them that they don't have to be perfect, that they don't have to strive to attain some crazy high level or expectation from their father. So there's a lot there in the book that we talk about as far as advice. But mostly it's just being a present, engaged father on a daily basis and walking in that awareness of your impact every day.
Awesome. And John, we're absolutely going to have you back on. And as my dad said, we have not watched the DVD. I want to ask you, do you have a favorite story or favorite interview from the DVD?
Wow, there's several. I'll tell you this one briefly. We interviewed Dr. Meg Meeker, and I've shared this one many times. And as a dad with daughters, this was a real wake-up call for me. But she's a pediatrician by trade, best-selling author, and she said, you know, John, on many occasions I would have young girls come into my office, and they were originally, it was 16, then they they were 15, then 14, then 13. It just got younger and younger. And they were having sex with their boyfriends. It wasn't physically or emotionally pleasurable, but they were having sex with their boyfriend. And so she would go through this exam, and before they left, everything was fine, but before they left, the little girl would say, "Hey, doctor, can you give me a prescription?" And she would say, "You know what? You're totally fine. What do you need a prescription for?" And the little girl would say, "I don't care what it's for, but just at the bottom put, cannot have sex." And so what she said is, she says, "John, these girls were having sex. Again, it wasn't pleasurably, physically, or emotionally, but it was the only affection and attention they were getting. They weren't getting that positive fatherly love from a dad. And so this was their permission slip to go say, 'Hey, Johnny, I can't have sex anymore.'"
Wow.
So as a dad with three daughters, that was one of the many wow moments that was like, whoa, okay, that's why we're doing the film. That's why we wrote the book, because it's these stories that men need to hear and then get practical information on how they can then be that father that adopt needs.
Fantastic.
You're on Twitter too, right? The Father Effect is on Twitter. At the Father Effect. You gotta follow this. This is an evolving story.
I mean, it is.
It, for all of us, and it's an important one. I highly recommend this for many reasons. Joe.
John, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Folks, get the book, The Father Effect, on Amazon, and get the DVD titled The Father Effect. Great pair here, and as you said, an evolving story. John Finch, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, my man. You're going to be right back. Network break, breaking news, coming up, analysis. Stay tuned. This edition of the Hagmann Report. You know, so many things taking place, so many headlines. We cannot be distracted. As I opened with, and Joe and I were talking, there are so many things going on. You've got the criminality of administration's past and the criminality of the globalist current. And it seems like we are not, we are anything but focused. Notice how quickly things like Las Vegas comes and goes. You had the church shooting. It's ancient history. You had the horrific event in New York City. Just totally off the front pages. We were getting reports now that the Vatican is the target. And I don't know how many people saw this, but it's the target for Christmas terrorist attack. And of course,
the West, they're saying.
Yeah, the West as well. And then, of course, domestically, you've got the issues. You've got CrowdStrike now, essentially cleaning out the DNC computers. Remember, and I talked about this on my morning show, and I know Joe and John and we collectively and individually have addressed this, where the computers during the so-called hacking by the Russians, well, the FBI were denied access, and of course not CrowdStrike. It looks like they cleaned up after the Awans cleared the DNC servers and the Awans had done a lot of things. I'm sorry, DNC servers. The Awans had penetrated the DNC and the Congress people, and of course there's funds. George Webb talks about this. It's interesting. And again, I mentioned George Webb because he's one of the few out there talking about the Awan family criminal cabal. We talk about it, of course. We are conducting our own research and investigation parallel to his. And Dr. Jerome Corsi, of course, is in talking about this as well. But there's a lot of things that are in motion right now. But before I kick it over to Joe, I just want to remind everyone, when we see documents such as Judicial Watch come out, and we see the heavy redactions, what does that say about the current, and not just the heavy redactions, but about the, it seems as if there are two tiers of justice. Justice for us and justice for the globalists, including but not limited to Hillary Clinton and those other people.
Now, we're going to
go ahead.
Talk about that a little bit and go to HagmannReport.com. There we put all the most important and interesting news stories we see on a daily basis. But there's been some interesting reactions to a few things surrounding Uranium One. Excuse me. One, you have yesterday Shepard Smith on Fox News basically putting up a criminal defense for the Uranium One scandal.
He got his facts wrong, too.
Oh, yeah. He got his facts very wrong. And there were a number of people who called him out. There was an article on Breitbart today. I didn't post this one. I was going to, and then I changed my mind. Fox News viewers demand Shep Smith be fired after error-filled Uranium One report. Some even said send him to CNN, and I couldn't agree more. In wake of Fox News anchor Shepard Smith's six-minute fallacy-filled Uranium One fact-check rant on Tuesday, social media is brimming up with enraged Fox viewers calling for the network to dump the longtime host and send him to CNN. You have articles from RawStory.com, Salon, the New York Daily News, saying, you know, how Shepard Smith was awesome in his reporting, but so many Fox News viewers want him gone because he didn't report things as the right narrative is on Uranium One, which is not true. It's what the facts say on Uranium One. And the Hagman Report talking about Katie Turr. She is an anchor on MSNBC, and the headline is just as the story reads: Katie Turr gloats, journalist purposely shot down Uranium One stories during the campaign. After conservative media forced the networks and liberal cable news to finally cover the latest FBI revelations over the Clinton Foundation's financial dealings with Russia, they've changed tactics from ignoring the story to dismissing it as bogus. Even MSNBC host Katie Turr bragged on Wednesday that White House on Wednesday's deadline, White House, that the media were fully aware of the Uranium One story during the campaign, but purposely chose to ignore it. That's about the most honest reporting I've seen from Katie Turr, saying that they purposely ignored the story. But we saw Hillary Clinton's response to this, saying that this would be an abuse of power, that this is an authoritarian regime unfairly targeting her, like some dictatorship, where political opponents are going to be unfairly and fraudulently investigated. And it is just a joke. It's such a joke to see the excuses that are made for her, the criminal cover-ups that are undertaken by the media and members in the world of politics and business for her. Even Judge Andrew Napolitano had issue with it. He penned a great article on Fox News. Judge Andrew Napolitano, the incredible new chapter in the Hillary Clinton Chronicles. And you can go to Hagman Report and read that. And he talks about the Justice Department's determination whether or not they're going to investigate the Clinton Foundation under the Uranium One deal. And Judge Napolitano in this article makes a great case for an investigation. So that is worth the read there. Now, what are we going to see with this Uranium One scandal? We heard about the sealed indictments last week. There was this big speculative push that there was a number of Democrats that were going to be arrested or named in those sealed indictments.
Forget about that. The key, I'm just going to throw this in there and then you continue. The key is the FBI informant. That's the key. There's audio tape.
Mm-hmm.
There's documents to prove the criminal cabal that existed and was the FBI looked the other way. Go ahead.
And I'm looking for this article I saw on I think it was the Daily Caller today, that talks about this FBI informant and even goes further, talking about somebody who paid out blackmail money in this Uranium One deal, wants it back, wants over $700,000 in blackmail money back. I'm going to have to find that stories. And then also, in a very underreported story today, you had the House passes tax reform. But interestingly enough, you have a number of people coming out against it. And again, this goes back to Judge Roy Moore to an extent, at least that the position his Senate seat from Alabama would hold in the Senate, giving them the 52-vote majority. But you have the NFL coming out against this tax bill that was passed in the House, saying that it is going to hurt their revenue because they're not going to be able to use taxpayer bonds to pay for stadiums. And their argument is, well, it creates jobs. So, you know, we're going to be against this tax plan, which is one of the second time that this year that the NFL is really sticking their neck out into the world of politics. And most of the fan base of the NFL is really getting sick and tired of what they're doing. But the tax plan being passed in the House, is that good news? I haven't went over the legislation. I'm hearing two completely different stories out of Republicans and Democrats. Some Republicans are saying this is bad. It's not going to help anything. It's going to hurt worse. And then throwing the Obamacare mandate out the window in that bill, the politicians that are commenting on it say that they don't believe it'll get through the Senate. The tax bill won't get through the Senate because they tried to slip that Obamacare provision into the bill. So it'll be interesting to see moving forward what happens with that. And then, as I said about the NFL, you have them really sticking their neck out. And I wanted to bring it up because the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, makes $31 million a year. And he has shown absolutely no leadership when dealing with these protests. And I want to ask the listeners out there, how many people who are employed in a corporation, in a company, can use their employer's time or time on the job to protest things they don't like? Because we have to remember, in the NFL, the football players who are conducting these protests are employees of the NFL. They don't only represent the team that they play for, they represent the NFL. So you couldn't get away with that anywhere else. And they're talking about this as free speech that they're allowing to happen, which is fine, but if you consider it in the context of employer-employee relationships, it takes on a new meaning. But the Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, makes $31 million a year. He wants a $20 million a year raise, access to a private jet for the rest of his life, and free health care for him and his family for the rest of his life. For somebody who has driven the NFL to its worst numbers in years, demanding that seems pretty ridiculous. It's not that we're going to sit here and continue to talk about the NFL, but it is relevant as they continue, again, to stick their nose into the world of politics. And usually you're on the wrong side, or at least on the wrong side of what the base of their viewers really want. And they're going to continue to see their numbers and their ratings hurt. I just saw statistics for the last week in the NFL, and numbers were down, over 30% in many of these games. So they're going to probably be running into revenue crises and more advertisers pulling back as that whole circus show is just getting out of hand. But
you know what, Joe? I got an email on this just now, and I apologize. I failed to mention the identity of the FBI informant.
Yeah, I don't think you did.
Well, William D. Campbell, he's been identified. In fact, he's self-identified. And
is
also,
that today?
Within the last, I think, 24 hours. I'm not sure. My apologies if I didn't. And Campbell was a lobbyist he was a former lobbyist for a Russian company, William Campbell. He had talked to Reuters earlier, I guess today or maybe late last night, but he's got documents and recordings. So William D. Campbell, and it's interesting to watch these various news agencies attempt to downplay or assail the contents of what the damaging documents that he's got, to the extent where he came out and said, look, I worked as an informant for the United States Department of Justice for several years. I've got the goods that will prove this paid. It's big news.
Will it be covered up? Apologies.
Well, and I think to a large extent it already has been. The question is how much of this will come out. So it's important to realize that I just want to make sure I've got this here. That I state that he's got recordings, because, and as a matter of fact, yeah, the informant made secret recordings, gathered records, and intercepted emails dating back to 2009 that showed that Russian officials had compromised an uranium trucking firm with bribes and kickbacks. This all under the nose of Barack Obama, knowing about this, under the nose of Cepheus and Shep Smith. That's how you pronounce it, Cepheus. Okay. the committee. Well, anyway, so there's a lot of meat again on this bone, but we're going to watch carefully with respect to this. And of course, Jeff Sessions was asked whether a special counsel should be appointed here, and he's feeling that this falls within the jurisdiction, the Justice Department will be fine. Coming up at the top of the hour will be Joel Richardson. Before we move on with the program, like I mentioned earlier, portion of the nice program brought to you by Omaha Steaks. You know, what did my wife fix you, Joe, and Eric the tech? What did you have when you went to my home today?
I had a beautiful ribeye
from Omaha Steaks.
It was delicious.
And I got to tell you, what a great gift. If you're looking for the perfect gift for someone who has it all, perhaps, and you know the holidays are fast approaching. So think about this. Omaha Steaks. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for just $49.99, you can get my family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter our code HH in the search bar. It's 75% off. You cannot beat this. And you know what? You go shopping there because Omaha Steaks, they've got over 500 gourmet gift ideas. They've got great steak. They've got the most flavorful tender aged beef. We love it. They've got seafood, poultry, pork, veal, lamb. It's incredible. And by the way, their cuts of beef are aged for 21 days to unlock the full flavors of the cuts. And they're hand-trimmed, and you could tell, vacuum-packed. I wonder if they massage the cows. Seriously, they're that good. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving to our listeners, our viewers, an exclusive savings. Listen to everything that you will get for less than $50. Listen to this pack. 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, the most succulent chicken breasts you'll ever have, 4 burgers, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha Steaks seasoning packet, which really, wow, it's great, 4 kielbasa sausages, and with this order, you'll get an additional 4 kielbasa sausages free. You cannot beat this deal. That's a lot of food for under $50. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter our code HH in the search bar, and get a 75% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit. So I just happened to think of that and happened to think, hey, my wife fixed you dinner tonight. But anyway, before work. How's that for a perk, huh?
While we're doing announcements here, don't forget tomorrow. Yes. Paul McGuire's Paradise Mountain Church prayer meeting is at 7 p.m. Go to paulmcguire.us to register. You can register for free. You can go to the prayer meeting for free. You just make sure that you register, and you do that again on paulmcguire.us. It's in. It's at the Garland. I'm going to have to pull this up. I can't ever remember.
We're just going to
the Garland Avenue Hotel.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's right there on paulmcguire.us. And he has these prayer meetings pretty frequently, and we've had a lot of listeners attend with always never anything bad to say about the prayer meetings. They absolutely love them. And John, actually, our producer, has been to quite a few, and he said that they were fantastic and all made up of Hagman Report listeners. So again, paulmcguire.us is the website. Go there to register for the conference, and you can do that for free. And this is at the Garland Hotel in North Hollywood, California, on November 17th. So if you're going to go, make sure you register.
Absolutely. You know, again,
9 minutes. What do we go from here?
Oh, man. I don't know. There's really nothing happening up there, you know. I don't even want to touch Al Franken. Well, you know, folks.
Well, you know, what makes me so angry about that is the. Again, what I said about the double standards in the media. Yeah. On Drudge, there's a number of headlines on the right-hand side. Second woman says, Franken, aggressive, harassing phone calls. MSNBC, he was not actually groping her. And the CNN is making these excuses saying, oh, it was a mock groping, and, you know, it was an unwanted kiss, and he apologized, so it's okay. And, I mean, it's infuriating.
Well,
to say the least.
Valerie Jarrett even kind of turned on Al Franken. In fact, here's what she tweeted out. Just imagine your mom, spouse, sister, or daughter in this photo. And of course, that photo of Al Franken, you know, turning the come in Radio Tokyo. Never mind the picture. And not so funny now, is it? Writes Valerie Jarrett. So it's interesting to see how this is playing out. And again, I think I think the morality here, the self destruction that we're witnessing is beyond the pale. And you know, isn't it something? When we started out, or when we ended last year, we were talking about things like Pedigate and Pizzagate and the perversion. The greater topic of perversion and people saying that's fake news.
Mm-hmm.
And we had last night, we had an Open Secret, the man from the Open Secret, behind the Open Secret documentary come on.
Matthew Valentine.
Ain't so fake now, is it? And to show the perversion, the depths of perversion. And when he talked about the initiations, you know, kind of like the mafia-esque initiations. That just blew my mind.
Not that
I knew it, but...
Not that this is... He was saying that this is not some, you know, obscure cult or you know, small percentage of Hollywood elites. It's basically like a gang initiation, rite of passage. And I've read other stories, just even today online, where it was talked about, just like he said, that... It was something that was cheered on. Sexual assaults, rapes of women was cheered on in these circles.
Yeah.
And when you think about
children,
that,
yes,
it just, is. It's horrifying. And you know, we've been talking about it for over a year now, since what, last October when the emails broke and we saw all the crazy things that were in John Podesta's emails and the Comet Ping Pong Instagram accounts with all those pictures, suggestive pictures of young kids and the Podesta's artwork and on and on and on. And here we are. And just as you said, everything seems to be coming to the light. There is a lot of exposure happening right now. And it's not limited to the world of movies and Hollywood. It is in the political arena. It is in the world of media. The top guy at NPR had to step down over sexual misconduct allegations today. And he's just one of many. One of the first reporter to publish the Trump dossier at Mother Jones is under a lot of scrutiny for sexual harassment, misconduct allegations as well. We're only seeing, you know, unless you're really looking for the stories, you're only seeing maybe 10% on mainstream news and even places like the Drudge Report of what is coming out against many people in Hollywood. There is a whole nother 90-95% of stories out there that are not being looked at, that are not being covered by the mainstream media, either because there's not the right name recognition or whatever it is. But for every story you see, there's probably 8 or 9 more stories on, you know, circulating in different magazines and internet sites that have not come really to the forefront of the news and the media's attention. So,
well, it's amazing, Joe, to watch all of this unfold in the manner it is, and it's every hour there's something new, there's something equally perverse, more perverse. There's yet another person, but as you had indicated, I'm waiting for them to just come out with the names, the identities of the congressmen who were involved in the lawsuits, settlements.
Did you hear this one? Fox News reported that 4 underage girls had come out and accused Michael Moore of sexual harassment. There are stories like this with other celebrities, musicians, that, and this came out on November 7th. I didn't see that anywhere in the news media. And you said, even with a lot of the non-disclosures agreement signed and the settlements that were reached, do you still think there is the possibility for lawsuits to make their way to the forefront?
Oh, heck yes. Yeah, okay. I strongly believe that. Regardless, you know, yeah, I truly do believe that. And, you know, how far have we come? Remember, and I was just trying to remember if this was the case. Yeah, it was. Remember Wilbur Mills? Does that name ring a bell to anyone?
No.
Okay. I guess you have to be as old as me, all right? Because he was a Democrat. He was in the House of Representatives, and he was caught in the Washington tidal basin with Fannie Fox. This is on October 9th of 1974. And there was outrage over this. Okay, here's just so I'm accurate on this, and I want to be, I don't like to read on air, but let me just, it was just to kind of give you kind of a context for the difference between then and now. And hey, this was, look, I remember this. So it's not that long ago. It was on 2 a.m. on October 9th of 1974, when police stopped a car in Washington, D.C. Inside the car, of course, was Wilbur Mills, the powerful Arkansas congressman. What's in the water in Arkansas? Anyway, he was chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, by no means a lightweight in Washington. He was drunk on his butt, and his face was injured. Now, another passenger, there was an Argentinian stripper who performed under the stage name Fannie Fox, got out of the car and jumped in the nearby tidal basin. See, yeah, that's how it went down. Anyway, there was a scandal because of that. Yeah, his face was, did I say his face was bruised? But anyway, it was. But there was a fight, and a big brouhaha back in 1974. Think about that, and people might say, well, you know, that's, so what? There was no sexual harassment. There was a lot of, dare I say, perversity, or it certainly was not received well. And I remember my parents and my family looking at it and saying, wow, man, a politician, can you believe a congressman would actually behave this way? Now look where we're at. And I bring this up only for context and comparison. That's all. And reaction to today. What happened 50 years ago versus, or what it'd be 40 some years ago versus today.
Okay.
So anyway,
we got about a minute left. I want to just bring your attention to this. There's two, Baltimore and Chicago have been dealing with lots of gun violence for a while now, and Chicago has reached its 602nd homicide of the year yesterday, when three people were shot. And then in Baltimore, in a place that's just been probably one of the worst areas per capita dealing with violence in a long time in our history, you had a homicide detective investigating a homicide shot in the head yesterday in Baltimore. Ugh. Leaving neighborhoods to still under a shelter in place order. And you know, these are supposed to be gun free zones. These are supposed to be, you know, the liberal gun control meccas of the United States, showcasing how gun control in their cities is so effective at reducing violent crime. But obviously that isn't the case. Baltimore has the highest homicide rates per capita of anywhere in the country, and Chicago has reached 600 homicides for the second time in 10 years, and it looks like they're going to surpass over 700 in the year if the trend keeps going, which is absolutely ridiculous. How do we turn this around? How does the cities and the states turn this around?
That's more gun laws, right?
Yeah,
more gun laws.
Something we're looking
into.
They're
working.
So that's interesting.
Hey, wait a second. Chelsea Clinton and the Burka Barbie. Chelsea Clinton and Burka Barbie.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about it, but you guys got to search that out on the internet.
We'll be right back with Joel Richardson after this. Don't go anywhere.